Welcome back to the sound plays of Traversity, Demons and Demigods, Book 2 of A Bridge of Doom. If you like what we provide, please rate, review, share, and follow on your favorite platform. Questions and compliments can be sent to our email.
Jumping horny toads! That fur-bearing varmint done stole me coffee! Need another!
This theater is not about profits, but the equipment and media do require money. Though listening to these productions is free for you, providing them isn't free for me, as we are completely free of advertising. If you care to help, please buy Sam a coffee via the coffee.com website listed with the descriptions of each episode. All proceeds go to our production material needs. Special thanks go to our first coffee angel, Juanita Paz Chalacha. Except those wishing to remain anonymous, benefactors will be announced in the final credits. And thank you truly for listening.
Lockpins out!
Lift the gate!
Step through the gateway and enter the universe of the Harkin Theater. This is episode 13.
This is book 2 of A Bridge of Doom by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Traversity, Demons and Demigods. The Journeys of an Enchanter.
Long walk to the medical center did not help his shoulder, and he was feeling sore by the time he reached the medical school building. He leaned against a wall for a brief respite from having to support the extra weight, then continued inside as he wondered about the enchanter and his whereabouts. Remembering he had not visited Marie all day, he hoped she might have some news about Gawain. With this in mind, he found the stamina to march down the halls to the hospital division and locate the proper elevator to Marie's ward. He entered her room, shuffling sideways to accommodate his cast.
It's me, sweetheart.
Glad to see you, my friend.
Paul halted and stared in disbelief at the familiar green-jacketed man seated apparently quite comfortably in the room's visitor chair, a dish of colorful fruit and a spoon in his hands. Marie grinned happily back at Paul from where she sat cross-legged in her bed, now in upright sitting position, her new blue blouse standing out brightly from the white walls.
Paul, you are looking like a fish frozen in water. Do come in.
Regaining his senses, Paul stepped in and allowed the door to shut behind him.
I'm sorry to stare like that, Gawain, but I've just come from an interrogation where I was grilled about you and where you had gone to.
Grilled?
I meant they were insistent that I babble my brains out about you and the magic and so on. I'm glad I thought you'd left us.
Gawain gestured his spoon into the air. Precisely why I decided to disappear, my friend. You wouldn't function very well without your brains.
You made a joke.
Certainly. I'm not all that stiff and serious, except when warlocks and demons abound. After your authorities, grilled me, I assumed you would be next. I figured the less you knew, the easier for you.
He calls it easy.
Paul quipped at Marie, who was still smiling at him. Care for something to nibble?
Maybe later.
Paul turned his attention to Marie.
How are you feeling, love?
Fine.
She bounced a little on the bed.
Gawain has been telling me all about his adventures here and at home.
Home?
Oh, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He still felt uncertain after finding Gawain so abruptly, especially after their fleeting glance of him after lunch yesterday.
Come, sit.
Marie moved the control pad and patted the foot of the bed in front of her.
Tell me what they decided.
Paul eased his weight onto the mattress.
They're still working on that. I figure they'll decide Brynth was caught up in some occult business and that we discovered it and he tried to prevent our informing the police with an elaborate accident. Art had more exciting ideas about secret police and stuff. Who really knows what they'll decide?
Both stories sound plausible to my ears. Gawain savored the sweetness of the fruit in the cup.
Yeah.
Paul noted something sad underneath the enchanter's cheerful facade.
What's bothering him?
Marie squeezed his shoulder gently.
What's wrong, Paul?
Oh, just a little sore from the walk over here. I don't think it's my privilege to pry into Gawain's problems, presuming I could understand them. Not yet, anyway. And I think I am getting a little hungry.
He touched her hand with his and smiled back weakly. Gawain mutely offered the cup he held. Thinking about it briefly, there was a lot of freshly cut fruit in there, including melons, berries, and peaches. The doctor's probably wanting to get Marie's caloric intake up after so long without food.
Sure, looks like you could use some help.
I'll say.
Marie held up another full fruit cup.
This is the third one this afternoon. You'd think they were deliberately trying to fatten me up, though I must admit my old clothes were pretty loose from all the weight loss.
Old clothes?
Yes. The medical school made a gift of new clothing for me. Blouses and such.
She nodded toward some department store boxes stacked beneath the newest bouquets of flowers, smiling back at him.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
He absorbed the gesture of goodwill and the probable amount of money spent, as well as the new blooms.
So you want some fruit?
He didn't want to presume upon the hospital services.
They're more than happy to keep me and mine happy. The nurses brought a dish to Gawain. After I explained, he was a cousin visiting me.
Cousin?
Yes, her cousin.
Paul blinked and stared in amazement at the stunningly beautiful blonde woman. The succuba that had seduced him. Wearing a snug red dress and heels, and sitting in the exact place where Gawain had been just a moment ago, tossing her head lightly to shift her wavy golden hair back over a shoulder, she winked sexily at him, slowly slipped a spoonful of blueberries into her mouth, her pink tongue caressing the spoon's bowl suggestively for just an instant. Then smiled secretly, one shapely leg crossing over the other and bouncing gently. Just as Paul's eyes followed her gleaming tresses down to her ample cleavage, lifting gently with breath, he blinked and she was gone. The enchanter in her place, chewing with amusement at his reaction.
Scary, isn't it? Jim, the male nurse on duty today, was falling all over himself to get anything my cousin wanted.
I can see why. Paul watched him for a few more seconds just to make sure who he was seeing was staying put. He remembered Gawain's brief physical transformation at the Royal Gala.
Here, let me feed you. I'm sure your arm gets tired doing double duty.
Marie grabbed a spoon and dipped it into her cup, slipping fresh fruit cocktail into his mouth. Ah, yes. Glink, you must be hungry as well. Gawain put aside his cup. Paul watched with incredulity as Gawain removed a bit of leftover sandwich meat from his pockets and offered it to the mudcat that scampered out from behind the window curtain and sat up on its haunches before him.
Oh, boy. The nurses saw him in here. They'd crap bricks.
Oh, dear. Really? The pure honesty of the enchanter's gaze struck Paul as very funny, and after swallowing his mouthful hurriedly, he started laughing, doubling over as far as his cast would allow. Marie looked at Gawain, who shrugged back innocently as Paul's mirth cascaded into severe coughs. Dear fellow, don't hurt yourself. Shaking his head and holding up a hand, Paul hacked a few more times, tears running down his face, then subsided and breathed deeply.
Don't worry, Gawain. If anything, it helps get rid of the dust in my lungs.
Very good, then.
Can I ask you something?
You just did.
Cute.
Paul allowed Marie to dry his face and eyes.
Art told me something about some warrior who appeared with a sword and fought off those things of Socondra's just before the place fell apart. He mentioned it looked almost like a theater projection because of the light around him. Who or what was it?
That was my second, Clough. I do not know how he managed to appear at that crucial moment, but I am thankful.
Your second?
As in dueling, Paul. Like a second in command.
Oh yeah, I knew that.
Paul remembered the old traditions.
And Art said that Clough said something about dragons before he disappeared. What was that about?
Yes, he said not to forget the wisdom of the dragons. Gawain had a faraway look. The dragons.
I wonder what he meant.
Realization burst across Gawain's face as he jumped up from his seat. By the gods! That's the answer!
What?
Gawain shook his head and held up a hand. I must get to a clear place. An empty place. His eyes burned through them as he struggled with some unspoken urge. Now!
There's the North Field, the place where I entered when I came here originally.
Yeah, near my old dormitory. It's after 5 o'clock, so most of the cars will be gone from the adjacent parking lot, and it'll be dark by the time we get there.
Gathering glink, Gawain quickly nodded approval, his eyes afire. Take me there. Because of Paul's soreness and Marie's lingering fatigue, after procuring a pass for her to leave for a little while with her cousin and Paul, for the good of their own image, the hospital authorities wanted to keep close tabs on her, they elected to ride on the intercampus shuttle that made a close pass by the intended field. Remembering the enchanter's unfamiliarity, Paul watched him as they observed the double bus approach and come to a stop before them. Gawain had seemed lost in a fog of thought or forced mental restraint, as Paul could best discern, until the shuttle doors opened. Snapping back to the present, Gawain waited for Paul and Marie to act, then imitated following them on board and to a seat. Almost ceremoniously, he stood by until his friends were situated, then, at a gesture from Paul, took a seat across the aisle from them, setting himself carefully on the padded bench. All the while, he cast curious glances this way and that, seeing the lights overhead, the driver at the front, the view from the windows.
It's called a piggyback bus, Gawain. Art sometimes drives these things, like a Porsche.
Art was famous, or infamous, for his deft and swift handling of the mechanical brutes through tight spaces. It would be a long while before the fellow could drive again.
Though, knowing Art, he'd probably insist he could do it with one hand.
It seems to be a large carriage that moves independent of draft animals.
Good point. They used to be called horseless carriages when they were first invented.
Gawain made a wry face. I wonder at the supposed improvement, Paul. Horses never expelled as much foul air as these carriages do.
I've thought the same thing.
Paul was glad the bus was nearly empty so no one could hear their conversation.
Funny you should notice that so quick. Actually, about the time the horseless carriage was invented, the cities had to deal with a lot of horse pollution just because of the sheer numbers. Since the foul air seemed to disappear right away as opposed to shoveling horse manure, they didn't think it would become a problem. It's taken our world a great many decades to realize that mistake.
At a touch from Marie, he leaned back in his seat as the driver shut the doors, lurching the vehicle forward and making Paul wish Art was driving on this occasion. His gentle starts and stops would have been easier on his mending bones than the muscle-bound student-athlete presently mauling the wheel. The sound of the rear-placed engine prevented any further conversation, and they turned their attention outside to the passing scenes in the early sunset, the bus wending its way along the narrow, winding campus roads, dropping off its other passengers at various parking lots until only Paul, Marie, and Gaewon remained. Soon, Paul nudged Marie to pull the signal cable, and the driver brought the bus to a halt next to the large, mostly empty parking area for faculty and visitors, below which were older dormitories. As they disembarked, Paul heard a huge sigh of relief erupt from the enchanter, and he and Marie glanced curiously at each other. Gaewon gazed out across the expanse of asphalt and white lines, with grass spreading away from its border, a strip of trees, and the geometric shapes of the city's tall buildings on the horizon beyond it. Where to, my friends? Marie pointed ahead to where the tasseled grasses stood quietly in the field beyond the lot.
A short walk to there, Gaewon.
She remembered the happenings of over 2 riads ago.
The Grands have taken our prince hostage and will kill him before we can provide rescue.
Without another word, Gaewon marched off towards the field, Marie following with an absent look in her eyes. After a few steps, she stopped and watched the enchanter moving briskly across the tarmac, then turned to beckon with a warm smile at Paul, who had remained at the bus stop. She waited patiently for him to catch up to her.
What's happening, Marie?
Something wonderful, if I know our enchanter friend. Come along, he will wait for you.
Uncomfortably aware of his caste, he shifted himself as best as he could within it and started walking with her at his side. The visible texture of the pavement disappeared gradually with the failing light, leaving long white ribbons glowing dimly in the pool of black. And soon the heated asphalt gave way to the cool breath of the field grasses, the only sound, aside from the distant roar of the city, that of them walking. They found Gaewon standing very still near the center of the field, his gaze to the heavens, while nearby, his mudcat bounded among the tufts, chasing unseen insects. You call this the North Field?
Yes. Since this is where I arrived on my first visit, I thought it suitable for your purposes. Especially if it be with dragons.
The enchanter lowered his eyes to meet hers. You are indeed a good woman. Take care of her this time, my friend. We cannot afford to lose her.
I'll do my utmost best.
Paul wished he could think of something more eloquent, and yet his reply seemed to be sufficient, Gaewon returning his attention to the darkening sky opposite the glowing tendrils of sunset. I have studied the stars in your sky one evening past, and the patterns are not familiar to those of home, as I would have expected. Do you know if there is a constellation of a dragon?
Why, yes.
Paul was suddenly pleased that he could offer some valuable information.
A friend used to show me all the constellations when I was a kid. Draco is his name.
Your friend?
No. Draco the dragon. He was named from our mythology. He is located in the vicinity of the North Star. Though the city lights are too bright, they wash out the North Star. But we should still be able to find Draco. Let me see now. It's still early yet. We may have to wait.
I have noted that your world is rarely without light, even in the latest hours of the night. Are not your white moon and stars enough?
Well, some people fear the darkness so much they want light around, even while they sleep.
But so much.
They do tend to overdo things on this world, Gaewon.
Indeed. Speak to me of this Draco. Your world has dragons?
Well, no one's really sure about that one, because if they did exist, it was so long ago that no one remembers. And I don't really know the tale of Draco. Art would be the better one to ask.
I see. Gaewon fell silent, staring at nothing in particular, then turned his face to the sky again. No one spoke for a long time as night's cloak slowly enveloped the land. The dusk air cooled around them. After the stress and excitement of the past few days, Paul found it pleasant standing quiet in the same field where he had enjoyed a picnic of sadness and donuts just before stumbling into Marie's world a second time. Between glances at the enchanter, who stood either with eyes looking far away, studying the distant profile and lit windows of the city proper, or up at the sky, Paul observed the encroaching evening. Realizing she had not spoken for a good while, Paul looked to Marie. The distant memory and fear in her eyes told him all that he required. She relived that deep hour of the night when time had stopped and specters came chasing on horseback.
Bobolai!
He placed his good arm around her.
Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
She nodded mutely, holding herself close to him and resting her head on his shoulder. Soon the brighter arrangements of the stars became visible, and Paul was able to follow his way to the familiar triad of points designating Draco's head.
There, Gaewon.
Hmm?
That's Draco's head, the dim triangle over there. His body trails around the northern section, roughly.
I believe I see it. Yes. Gaewon nodded, then bent over to pick up Glink and placed him around his neck. This shall truly be a test of the powers that have sustained me, nurtured me, a test of the audible life current of which I have been taught, of that from which issues the force of life, of enchant, to all worlds.
What are you going to do?
Go home, hopefully. The signs are positive.
What signs?
Orphan of the North, North Field, North Star, Draco in the North. All these things promise that which I need. Gaewon's eyes suddenly glowed in the darkness, and he raised his hand to the sky as if to catch lightning.
Go down!
Darkness suddenly fell upon them.
My God!
Paul and Marie listened as every sound instantly hushed. Their eyes readjusted, and they noticed all the lights of the city and the campus were out.
A power failure.
No, it is power working. Paul marveled at how bright the sky had become, the infinite stellar matrices burning with an intensity he had seen only in places far from the light pollution of civilization. Then he saw where Gaewon and Marie stared. From within the constellation of Draco, now clearly seen wending its way around the northern sky, a spinning point of light descended with frightening speed, as if a single star had torn itself free from the heavens and was hurtling toward the earth. They could only gape at what was falling upon them, while Gaewon joyfully threw his hands into the air. The huge ball of white fire impacted the field, sending towering walls of flame shooting into the night. In the next instant, the inferno melted away, and the space around them was filled with the silhouette of a magnificent serpent.
Everyone's eyes, blinded by the explosion of light, readjusted to the starlit environment. Paul and Marie could discern movement at one end of the serpent, but they only stood dumbly and stared in utter amazement at the manifestation before them. Bent over from either relief or fatigue, Gawain slowly straightened himself and looked into the familiar eye that rested upon him.
Blitheron, I look upon thee with a joy that fills my heart.
The voice I hear is Gawain's. The heart I feel is Gawain's. Yet the form I see is different. The world on which I rest is different.
Yes, my friend, things are different. But only for the moment.
The great head rolled to one side, gazed around the field, then looked directly at Paul and Marie.
Speak your name, old one and young one.
I am Paul, a friend of Gawain.
Paul felt strange, as if his very psyche was being stripped of all its layers until he felt naked and exposed. Somehow the creature could see exactly who he was without asking, the giving of one's name a necessary formality.
I am Marie.
Marie felt the same sensation, but remembered a tale told to her when she was young.
A tale that warned you could not lie to a dragon.
May you grow and unfold with much light, prince and princess.
The dragon turned his head sideways and rolled one eye back to the enchanter.
Why have you called me hence? And for what purpose do you stand on this pretty world cloaked in misery that spins in the lowest depths of the plains?
Forgive me, my wise friend, for my calling was due to a great fear I have.
The great eye darkened with angry disapproval.
Is this fear of thine one that will be scorched by my breath? Is this fear one that will tremble and flee from the thunder of my song?
No. The serpent's eye returned to its reflective glimmer, and his mind voice was silent for a long moment, its stare locked upon Gawain as if trying to see through him. Both Paul and Marie realized a new respect for this man who could stand before such terrible eyes and be able to converse so confidently, then wondered what fear could possibly exist in such a man. For a moment, Paul took notice of the darkened city, and he wondered if life itself had stopped outside the field on which they stood.
What do you require, aspirant?
Only your wisdom, your knowledge of the invisible worlds.
If it be a question that will help you conquer your fear, pray, ask.
How can I... What way can you show me towards home?
If home be the sun world of which we are born in this incarnation, then that way be along the inner pathways. Where does your fear hold you? Clearly you successfully found your way to this tortured place.
That way was crude and painful and has left me weak and uncertain. I fear the same way back will break me. Thus, that door is locked against me now.
Gawain was shaken and tired, looking as if he was about to fall to his knees.
All ways down are hard, aspirant, for in descending you gather invisible sheaves and karma that bind thee and blind thee, yet protect thee from the coarser vibrations. The path leading up is simple. for all you need do is release thyself into the waves of sound, shed thy momentary shell, and follow thy heart home.
Karmic burden as well? This means my calling has been hard on you, my friend. Gaewon straightened with honest concern. I did not wish to bring difficulty upon you.
Nay, aspirant, I can protect myself briefly, except the power called upon to bring me and shield me is taken from the mana of this world. If I so chose, I could light upon this sphere at will, though the rude vibrations and thought forces here batter and beat me as they have thee.
Then let us ascend and ease both our souls. My friends, I must leave you now. My task is complete. Paul's mind whirled with questions about everything the dragon had said, but he could only stare silently back. Marie stepped forward and hugged him close.
Fare thee well, Gaewon. I would have enjoyed your company for a while yet, but do not think me ungrateful. Again, you have saved me. And Paul, we are in your debt.
No, no. He shook his head as he released her from their embrace. You are in debt to no one. I serve only as a chosen channel for greater forces.
I know, but your courage and strength is an inspiration. I only hope I can be worthy of it.
He hugged her again, then kissed her lightly. You already are. Paul finally found his voice and stepped forward.
Will we see you again?
You know the answer to that, Paul. The enchanter tapped the medallion he knew was still under Paul's shirt. Use your intuitive powers. As you have learned, you can't always believe what you see. He reached out and lightly grabbed Paul's shoulders, gently hugging him around his cast.
Thanks.
Paul took Marie's hand in his own. What is the answer to your question? Considering this for a moment, he looked to Marie, who smiled back, and somehow he thought he could sort of feel the answer.
Yeah.
Gaewon nodded approval and turned back to the dragon. Blitheron, let us return home. My task is done.
Indeed, it has only just begun, aspirant.
The serpent's golden eyes wandered around the field with muted curiosity. With surprising deftness, Gaewon climbed onto Blitheron's back and seated himself wearily behind the dragon's head, while Paul and Marie stepped back involuntarily, expecting sudden eruptions of movement and magic. But to their astonishment, very little action seemed to take place. The great dragon closed his eyes, dousing the light which had shone from them and shrouding the field in darkness. Gaewon's silhouette could be seen against the starlight as he held himself in a relaxed pose, hands joined before him. With the stillness came the now almost familiar hush of the moment, and the couple could only stand, unmoving in their curiosity. Paul and Marie were surrounded and permeated with the melodic undulations of a single chanted word, while somewhere within this sound could be heard the enchanter's voice joining at a different, higher pitch, creating a consonant harmony with the dragon. Two, above that was the reflection of an ethereal chorus that, to Paul's ears, dwarfed the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, all singing this one word. Paul realized Marie was singing with them, her pitch enriching the harmony, and over him he felt a closeness and warmth that seemed to be part of the music. No longer able to resist, Paul joined in the song chant and he felt himself immediately lifted, his body tingling and less heavy. And though the field was dark, he could see light when he closed his eyes.
With this inner eye, he watched as a pillar of white descended from the heavens to touch the earth before him and Marie. A fleeting image appeared on his mind screen of the dragon winging skyward. As quickly as it came, the rod of light lifted and was gone. Paul opened his eyes, and with Marie, they watched as the city lights reappeared in the distance, like hundreds of fireflies easing the shadow of night, until even the nearby light poles flickered and hummed to life with their familiar cold glow. With them could be heard the distant cough and roar of engines restarting, the pulse of city nightlife returning.
What was that?
She closed her eyes with a happy smile.
The free thinker's chant. The sound of God. The word hue.
It was beautiful.
For the first time, he felt he understood the religious fervor that led others to construct cathedrals and churches, yet this was beyond anything so mundane as a mass religion.
It makes me feel so content, so happy.
Yes, that's part of its purpose, to balance your outer with your inner being.
Really? Why haven't you ever shared it with me?
You never asked.
But something so beautiful, why not share it anyway?
That is not the way of the free thinkers. Each person's path is their own and may not be forth upon another. The free thinker's way of life is unique to each person.
I see. Would you teach me more about this? This way? This path?
She squeezed his fingers gently.
With utter happiness and joy, my friends.
Then tugged him along as she walked further into the field. Paul stopped and peered skyward, the stars dimmed once again by the city lights.
Do you suppose they made it back?
What does your inner voice tell you?
I'm beginning to understand now. God. Now I feel like the one who's new here.
I do love you, Paul, and I'm glad I'm here.
She pulled him close and kissed him.
Me too.
He hugged her again with his good arm, then gazed into her smiling eyes, took her hand, and touched it to Rothson's medallion.
I'm glad I'm with you. Always.
Diversity, Demons and Demigods, Part 1. Sound plays of the second novel were written, recorded, directed, mastered, and produced by Kurt Paul Hotelling. Copyright 2024. Character voices for Episode 13 are performed by Geraldine Cummings, Kevin Norris, Darcy Aridell, and H, the Great and Powerful. The Sextology of Novels are available through Amazon.com, on Kindle Books, can be ordered at your favorite bookseller, or can be purchased directly from the author. Merely submit a request to our email. The wonderful music for this episode of the Harkin Theater was composed and performed by the ensembles of Evan McDonald, the delightful Mocha Music, DeKaibo, and licensed by PremiumBeat.com. Public domain music performances are licensed under Lieber Creative Commons. Sound effects and original Foley provided by freesound.org, Mixkit of Victoria, Australia, sounddogs.com, Cusp Studios, and the BBC Library. This was recorded on location in the universe.